mettez ce terre. Et c'est quoi je bidan, I want to rescue in goodness and to know the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those to be near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, let's start with the meditation. Start by bringing out the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Now is the time for meditation. We put down all other business and concerns, all other thoughts and moods. Put our sole attention to our meditation. Let's start by seeing that the body is tranquil. Just send the mind through the body. Accept
various parts of the body, various elements of the body as they are. From the top of the head to the soles of the feet, back again. Just this impersonal blob, body, just bring tranquility to it. Maybe there's a lingering pain in the body. And just accept that. The gentle and patient awareness. Relax the eyes. The eyes are a symbol for either being stuck in the five hindrances or developing the seven factors of awakening. Make sure the eyes are relaxed. Blindness of vision. And see where the mind is. Don't flow after the asavas. Wherever the mind wants to flow out into the world, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, thought, eyes, ears, nerves, the tongue, the body, the mind. Anything at all. Just give that up. Drop it. Put it down. Don't get stuck. To just remind Ajahn Chah's one, if you ever find it hard in meditation, just take a few deep breaths and start again. It's just the quality of our mindfulness we're trying to develop. And now is the time to bring up our meditation object, such as Bud with the in-breath and Do with the out-breath. Sense of sabai, at ease. Just know the in wind, know the out wind. Calming, settling, at peace. I just take the time to review how we set up our meditation, the qualities of our heart, how we maintained our mindfulness, the means that we use. What its effect was, how we sustained our mindfulness during the meditation. As you wish, may continue to meditate during the Dhamma talk. As you wish, may end the meditation. So in Buddhism we have this problem of suffering. Suffering. Because the things that we take in the world as happiness, they're fleeting, they don't last. Our bodies don't last, our possessions don't last, our loved ones don't last, buildings don't last, even the world and the universe doesn't last. So when we put all of our commitment and everything into these things, all there is change. So if we attach to the world as happiness, all the world can bring us is suffering. And so the Buddha taught us to be heirs to the Dhamma, not heirs to material things. So, you know, as lay people, yes, they have the five precepts you can still enjoy some of the sense pleasures. But often until people have a little bit of renunciation, it's very difficult to practice. It's very difficult to see the mind, it's very difficult to perfect sila. And so we have to contemplate. It's like a monkey in a burning cage or being in a burning house. Like suffering is, it's a big problem. Ajahn Chah said, you know, if you touch the ball of lava on the top, molten ball, it's hot. On the side, it's hot. On the bottom, it's hot. The back, the front, it's hot. It's hot all over. So unless we actually see suffering, we're not going to want to seek for a way to end suffering. And the problem with our modern age is there's just so much information. And so we take things that sound nice as Dhamma. And many people even take teachings of the Buddha as their own. Even Devadatta, the Buddha's cousin, tried to take over the Sangha from the Buddha. But the Buddha didn't want that. Because a Buddha is the pinnacle of existence. And then even before the Buddha died, his two great disciples, Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Moggallana, died. But to become a Buddha is a very difficult path. It's incomparable. So the Buddha is the one who truly has a pure mind. Right? Whatever the Buddha's analogy was, it's like a cart maker, one who makes chariots. For kings, for example. You know, you ask them about the axle, or you ask them about the wheel, or you ask them about any part of that chariot, and instantly they will be able to tell you. Instantly they will know everything about that, because that's their field of mastery. That's their domain. And so the Buddha's domain is the nature of all things. So the Buddha's omniscience is, it's not that the Buddha knows everything all at once, but such is the power of the Buddha's mind that he has penetrated the very nature of existence. And so anything that he put his mind to, he could see clearly. And then what did he tell us? He said, yeah, pick up a handful of leaves and said to the monks, you know, which is more, the leaves in the forest or the leaves in my hand? And, you know, there's just these, probably these few dead leaves in his hand. And of course, the monk said, many more, multitudes more the leaves in the forest than the leaves in your hand. And the Buddha said, but you know, many are the dhammas that I've understood, many are the things that I've penetrated and I can see. But these handful of leaves, these are what I teach. These are the teachings that actually lead beyond suffering. And so, however we practice to develop faith in the Buddha's teachings, we have to have this coupled with an understanding of suffering. Because often life is comfortable. You know, pleasure and happiness of existence, you know, it has its ability just to let days and weeks and months and years pass by. Before you know, another decade, another life, another 1,000 lives have gone by. And so the Buddha said, we have to actually develop mindfulness here in the present. And that mindfulness is the four foundations of mindfulness. And it's a supreme teaching. So in that four foundations of mindfulness is everything. It is those handful of leaves. So we can direct the mind to a body, such as the breath, body, awareness of body posture, the four elements, the body parts, the stages of decay of a body, all the way down to when it's a skeleton turned into dust in a desert. Because each of them all depends on the ability of the person. But any kind of body, so elements, the earth, for example, just see the body as a clump of earth, just see the body as a clump of water. That's still mindfulness of the body. And so, yes, we develop our meditation object, but ultimately the Buddha's teachings are supreme. So, and he said mindfulness of the body is supreme, and then feeling, because unless we overcome feeling, our reactions to feeling, you know, we'll never be able to taste the highest. So as our meditation, as our parami, as our practice grows stronger, eventually we're able to actually break through feeling. We're able to see feeling as just a bubble, that we don't attach to the happiness of our meditation, that we don't attach to the sufferings that arise in the body, that we start to have mindfulness of things that we were previously ignorant to. And so we start to develop this mind of upekkha. It's unmoved by feelings. And then awareness of mind state. Sometimes practice is difficult, but we can at least be aware of the mind state that we have. And by having mindfulness of our mind state, at that time we're not going to react to that anger. At that time we're not going to react to that desire. At that time we're not going to let that defilement grow, because we have enough mindfulness to see that that's arising in the mind. And so by just mindfulness of mind state, we can protect ourselves. And then the last one is mindfulness of dhammas. And that's where we actually contemplate things like the Noble Truths, the 10 wholesome and unwholesome courses of action. And like I always talk about these 10 unwholesome and wholesome courses of actions, because they're at the very heart of Buddhism. So they're basically the five precepts, an extension of the five precepts that go into the mind. So you have abstention from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, harsh speech, divisive speech and gossip, idle chatter. And then it goes into the mind, and you give up thoughts of covetousness, desiring for this and desiring for that, and accumulating this and accumulating that. And thoughts of anger. This is where any malicious or irritated thought that comes up in the mind, we're able to extinguish it. And then thoughts of wrong view. Now we see that all these things in the world, the views are many, the ideas are many, but the views of the Buddha are true. This, the right first level of right view is those teachings that lead everybody to heaven, encouraging beings in going to heaven. That's the worldly right view. And then the Buddha's right view empties that of attachment, that the highest is not going to heaven, but it's Nibbana. It's the path of the Buddhas, the Pacheka Buddhas, the great disciples of the Buddhas, and all of the Arahants. Whether it's a lay practitioner, or a monk, or a nun, or whoever it is, it's all about keeping our mind in these four areas. And so the formal meditation is very useful, because that gives us a gauge to see how is our concentration going, you know? Because the pull of the world is so strong. So can we sit there? Can we get delight in our meditation object? Can our mind unify in peace? Can we sustain it for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for 15 minutes, for half an hour, for an hour? Are we able to contemplate the qualities of the Buddha? Are we able to see the other side of a nature, such as, you know, old age, sickness and death, and change, without our mind shrinking? And so these kind of things, they give us the ability to see where we're actually at. But until the mind has some calm, until the mind has a base, it's very difficult to contemplate, very difficult to incline the mind. Because the mind is infatuated with sight, sound, smells, taste, touch and thought. It has all these stories about the past and the future and the present, and it's just consumed by greed, hatred and delusion. So when we think sitting in meditation may be difficult, what we're actually seeing is that we haven't yet attained to peace, that our mind is consumed with the world. And in this process of detaching from the world, as we focus on the Dharma, as our faith grows, as our inspiration grows, then with persistent effort, with dauntless perseverance, we actually start to gain a foothold in the Dhamma. Just like that turtle, we're walking one step at a time, assured of itself. 5 minutes of mindfulness, 15 minutes of mindfulness. The mind is actually able to sustain itself. And for some, samadhi is difficult. So then we also have the bhavana path. And the bhavana path is where you take like one of the six recollections of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, of generosity, of sila, of the five qualities of a heavenly being. And for example, sila, virtue, is the sentence is, you reflect on your virtue as being unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped at, leading to samadhi. And so this is an example of a bhavana. And so by contemplating that with the mind, by directing the mind to that, all the same factors of that are in Anapanasati, with the mind growing, and, you know, pamoja is there, and then the body becomes tranquil, and piti and sukha arise, and all these things, so the mind gathers into samadhi. And the Buddha said that even in a busy household, with children at your feet, you can contemplate these things. So it's not just for monasteries, it's not just for quiet forests, it's what are we doing in the forest in our heart? How are we making use of the time in our day to develop these things? Because when we die, if we haven't actually looked into our attachments, things are going to be difficult for us. And so this is the using the suffering of life by focusing on the inspiration of the Dhamma, by being an heir to the Dhamma, by living our life for the Dhamma. So even if one is just keeping the five precepts, you know, by having them as the foundation, one can develop those inner qualities so the heart is radiant. And then even with a little bit of effort in meditation, one starts to see that luminosity of the mind. Because when a mind has virtue, when a mind has those precepts as a base, samadhi is already there. The Dhamma is already close at hand. And so it's just to get that stronger faith, We need to correct our views. We need to associate with wise people, like the Kruba Ajahns in our forest tradition, and then lead back to Ajahn Mun, or like as this recent book here of Ajahn Ted. These great forest masters have shown us the way. And so we take as a basis a belief that these beings have attained a higher fruition, and then based on that Sangha, our faith grows. And as our faith grows, then our efforts grow. And as our efforts grow, then we start to one by one overcome those underlying tendencies, overcome those bad actions and the results of those bad actions. And it's like the full moon being released from the clouds. So previously, those bad actions were causing us to feel bad, were causing us not to feel right, were causing our mind to be agitated and concerned. But as we purify those actions, the mind is purified, and the mind is like a full moon set free from the clouds. And that full moon, what is it doing? It's reflecting the light of the sun. And one of the Buddha's epithets is kinsman of the sun, the brother of the sun. And so what we're trying to do is be like that full moon. See the nature of this body. Have a cool heart. Even though we try to develop the piti sukha and the pamoja, these joyful states, these happy. And so pamoja is like delightfulness, and piti sukha is joyfulness and happiness. And so these things are results of the practice, so we don't attach to them. But as they are there in the mind, then the mind begins to refine. Then we don't need as coarser objects at that time, because the mind is refined. And some people actually get attached to that state. And so as time goes on, as that refinement occurs, that's when we need to actually also contemplate. We need to see the nature of the body. We need to understand the Eightfold Path, or the khandhas, the nature of what a being really is. And so whether we have the teachings of the Buddha or the Kruba Ajahns, we use that refinement of mind to actually contemplate these things for ourselves. And maybe we don't have it all correct yet. Maybe we don't really know ourselves. But by actually trying to contemplate these things, by directing our mind to them, by sustaining thought on them, what happens is our wisdom and our insight evolves, and it becomes personal knowledge, and then knowledge and vision arises, where we actually see things for ourselves. And it all stems from this good friendship. So we see that the Buddha truly knew, and so those handful of leaves that he taught, that Dhamma that he taught, this is the thing that we befriend, because this is our inheritance of the Buddha. So all those beings that point to those teachings, all those beings that show us the way to those teachings, all those beings that encourage practice and insight into those teachings, that's Kalyanamitta, that's friendship with the Buddha. Because we just have to look in our life and we see suffering all around us. And just look in the moods that the mind goes through when it's not practicing, when it's not radiant. You know, sometimes people are getting angry at this, or they think things about that. But it's not ultimate reality. These are just the stories of the mind. You know, we don't know when those beings are going to change. We don't know if those stories are really true. And so a lot of the content of the mind is just useless chatter. Doesn't really have any actual ultimate purpose. But the Dhamma itself has ultimate purpose. It's something that can actually lead us out of the mud. And the Buddha said, one who is stuck in the mud can't get out of the mud unless there's somebody outside the mud trying to help them out. So after the Buddha's enlightenment, he was able to lead the next disciples, those five ascetics, out of the mud. And then collectively and so on and so forth, we have the Sangha all the way down to the present. And so We try to look at the areas, and the highest areas is the arahants, because they're the ones who are actually out of the mud. They're the ones who are actually holding up the banner of the Buddha. And it's a very, very refined mind. I mean, they've become the mind of a Brahma and they've let go of everything. They're actually the heritage of the Buddha. Even if an arahant chose not to teach and just dwell in silence the rest of their life, the Buddha wouldn't say anything against that, because arahants are supreme beings. They've really done the work. And the Buddha is very happy for anybody to do the work. Though he also says there is the praiseworthy qualities and how, you know, one should act as they speak. So if you have talking about knowledge and vision and talking about seclusion and talking about practice, to not be a small teacher, to be a big teacher, is to be somebody who actually really does that, who really lives like that, who puts their life for that. And then it's known as the 10 praiseworthy qualities that the Buddha praises for bhikkhus, for example. So there's actually a higher extent of how we can act for the benefit of ourselves, for the benefit of others, for the benefit of both. And that's the kind of being like Venerable Sariputta was, for example. And so developing our wisdom to the fullest extent so we can actually help people. It doesn't mean we're just clinging on to the world as well. You know, without seclusion, without focus on the Dhamma, then the mind will fall from those states very quickly. So to have a mind that actually inclines to the Buddha's teachings, I've found it useful over the years to actually contemplate on suffering. Because when you see into suffering, you're going to want to find a way out. Like, you know, what if in the next life we're disabled, or we don't have a limb, or we're blind, or we're all these difficulties face us. Or in this life, if we get some illness, where for 10 years we're bedridden, you know, before we die. Or we're born into an area of the world where we don't hear the Dhamma. Many things could happen, we don't know. And so there's these physical sufferings, and then there's the sufferings of not being around the Dhamma, or the sufferings of being born into a family where we don't learn precepts. And so we have to go through all those things again. And so by actually seeing that, you know, the house is on fire and we're in this house, it gives us a reason to practice. It gives us a reason to grow as a human being, to be a better human being, to help ourselves and to help others. And like as lay people, learning to give, and also give in our own practice, giving in our seclusion, giving of our time for things that are in line with the Buddha's teachings, and then using that inner strength to reflect on it. Like, what goodness have we done today? What generosity have we done in the past? And we use this as a way to actually bring happiness into the mind. And the Buddha encouraged that. Because then when we use that happiness in our mind, then we're going to be able to develop our meditation more. We're going to be able to develop our samadhis more. And so we have this like internal weather system where it doesn't matter what's going on in the world. It doesn't matter what's going on in politics and countries and kings and other people's mind. What's going on in our practice? You know, because the Buddha said the Dhamma is timeless. Beyond time, meaning that when those teachings of a Buddha are in the world, anybody who practices them, anybody who takes them up and looks into them, anybody who applies themselves to them with wholeheartedness, then only goodness is going to come. Only goodness will result. And that simile of the blind tortoise in the ocean, once every 100 years, it puts its head to the surface, and there's that yoke, that circle floating on the surface. And what are the odds of it putting its head through that yoke? If the ocean is 70% of the earth, the yoke is very small, The tortoise is very small, and so the odds are tiny. And the Buddha used that simile to say how rare it is to be born as a human being and hear the Dhamma. In the long course of samsara, that's his analogy for how rare it is, what a gift it is to have this opportunity. Because look how many beings in the world are not interested in the Dhamma. It's here, they don't know about it, or they're looking in the other direction. And so the Buddha didn't worry about other people's minds, but for those who are interested, to actually take use of that opportunity. And suffering being the first noble truth, we can look into those actions. A killing is suffering. Non-killing is not suffering. Stealing is suffering. Non-stealing is not suffering. Sexual misconduct is suffering. Non-sexual misconduct is not suffering. Lying is suffering. Not lying is not suffering. And all the way through these things, this is where we have to look in our own actions. Because if we had those 10 wholesome courses of actions in our mind right now, completed, we would be arahants. We would be finished the path. So this is where our work is, to actually look into suffering, look into the practice, and keep our mind in these four foundations of mindfulness. And to bring up a sense of samvega, spiritual urgency. Because, you know, one of the teachings for the Buddha, for the monks, is the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? And then so we use this as a reflection to see, what good am I doing in my life? What more good can I do? And for the monks, we have the reflection that, you know, for my own good, may I strive. For the good of others, and usually that's for those who have offered the four requisites, like such as the daily meal or the robes. And so for the good of others, may I strive. And then for the good of both, may I strive. And so we have this way of actually overcoming the lazinesses and the indifferences of the mind and put our mind onto what is really important. So that is the final desana for now, before leaving. Okay. Chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Sorry. And the blessing. Yata varivaha pura pariparenti sagarang evangi vaito dinam petanang upakapati chitang patitang tunghang kipameva samijitu sabe parentu sangapa chando panara so yata manijotira so yata subityo viva chantu Savaroko vinasatu mate pavantvantarayo sukhiti kayuko pavahapivadana sili sanicca utapachayino chataro dhammavatanti Ayuvano sukhang.